and welcome to Lunch Profil. My name is Karina Thorsen Wright, and I'm a librarian at the University Library at Oslo Met. In today's Lunch Profil, I'm having a conversation with Kira Del Mar, librarian and author of a large survey on LGBTQIA plus folks' attitudes towards and experiences with public libraries in Norway. A unique survey that received over 600 responses from queer people from all over the country. Hello and welcome to you, Kira.
Hi.
I just want to thank you for joining me here today to talk about your research. It's very exciting and important, your project, and it was a part of your bachelor's degree in library and information science at Oslo Met, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here with you today. Yeah, this was my bachelor's thesis project, which I finished in last June of 2021. Feels a lot longer ago than that, in the pandemic times where time has no meaning.
In the midst of the pandemic. And I can't believe that you managed to go through with such a huge survey. Kudos to you.
Thanks. I think in some ways the pandemic actually made it easier because people were so much more used to doing everything online now. So I had this massive online survey and it was just kind of natural for people to participate online. Not nearly as many other things for them to be out doing in the real world. So
that was kind of lucky then.
Yeah, in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah. So just first a little introduction to you. Who are you and what is your background besides being a librarian?
Yeah, I'm Kira Del Mar. My background is as a teacher, my professional background at least. I'm American, as you can hear. I've been in Norway for 6.5 years now. And I have a BA in history, European history, and a master's degree in early modern history of science, very niche and completely unrelated to what I'm doing now. And then I worked as a teacher for 7 years in California before moving here, and then discovered that I could not be a teacher in Norway with my education background, was not NOKUT approved. So I ended up switching career paths, and I'm very happy that I decided to go with library and information science at Oslo Met. And now for the last 5 months, I've been working as a school librarian at a barneskole here in the Oslo area.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how did this project come about then? Where did you get the idea? What prompted you?
Well, I am queer myself, so I kind of knew in the back of my head that I wanted to do something having to do with libraries and queerness, because I feel like reading and queer representation in media has been a really important part of my own process of kind of coming to understand my own identity. But the specific, I can think of kind of two specific things that prompted me to go with this specific project. And the one happened during my second year praxis. I was at a library in Oslo, and a patron came in one day, male presenting, and he came up to the desk and I was kind of observing, and the librarian was there beside me and she took the lead in the conversation, and the patron started saying, I'm not sure, can you check what books are loaned out on my partner's card, because our son has borrowed a lot of books on both of our cards, but I don't know, and I've returned all the ones that I know about, but I don't know which ones my partner has loaned out. And he didn't use any pronouns for his partner, but I noticed that the librarian that I was working with automatically used feminine pronouns and said, like, oh, what's her name? And, or I think she actually said, I can't look up things on her card, because that wouldn't be ethical. She gave this really professional and polite and accurate response, but she throughout was using female pronouns for this patron's partner, even though he hadn't specified pronouns. And it turned out that he when he responded, he started using masculine pronouns for his partner, but the librarian didn't notice and she kept using feminine pronouns, even though he was kind of subtly trying to like prompt her to use masculine pronouns. And after he had left, you know, he didn't make a big thing of it, but after he had left, I kind of pulled her aside and was like, did you realize that this person had a male partner? And she was really embarrassed when she realized what had happened and was saying like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. And, you know, she's a very tolerant person, very open-minded, would never have done that on purpose. But I think it's just such the heteronormativity, as we say, is so deeply ingrained in Western culture, and Norwegian culture is no exception. That we make those kind of assumptions, those heteronormative assumptions, that if a man comes in and is asking about his spouse's card, that spouse is probably a woman. And, you know, in many cases that's true, but in many cases it also isn't. And we make the same kinds of cis normative assumptions about people's gender identity. So that specific experience prompted me to think about queer library patrons' interactions with the library system here. I assumed that was not a one-time isolated incident. And then the other thing that really prompted it was the class in universal design that I took in my third year with Gerd Berge. And I ended up writing my paper for that class on library services and barriers to service for queer individuals. And I found out that there was a lot of international research on the topic, and approximately zero in Norway. So those two things were what combined to bring about this project. And then the project just kind of sprawled and spiraled into a gargantuan survey.
Yeah, it was needed then, in other words.
I think so, yeah. And I hope that this one will not be the last, and that other current library science students will take up the mantle and keep going with this kind of research.
You got the ball rolling.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, it, as you say, it's a very comprehensive survey, and you received over 600 responses from queer people from all over the country, which is amazing. Can you say something about how you conducted the survey?
I was overwhelmed by the number of responses. I had no idea how many to expect. And in total, I ended up running several parallel surveys, which I can say more about later. But I got over 1,000 responses total, and 642 were from LGBTQIA+ people. I ran the survey online. I had it in both an English and a Norwegian version to try to make it as accessible as possible to people who have grown up in Norway and also queer folks with immigrant backgrounds. And I just shared it. I reached out to some queer organizations and quite a few of them shared it, but I also just shared it as far and wide as I could on social media, made a landing page for the survey and shared it in a bunch of different Facebook groups, and on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm too old for TikTok, so did not go there, and Snapchat, but so the one thing that I think I wish that I had access to broader sampling methods, because I do think that the way that I conducted the survey probably biased my sample a little bit toward people who are very queer, as in people who are engaged with queer groups on social media, queer politics. I think that my sharing the link was probably most visible to people who are already quite engaged in a culture that's based on that aspect of their identity. I probably didn't reach many of the people who, you know, are just somebody who's a woman and happens to like other women, but isn't really engaged in queer culture. So that's something that I would love to follow up on and try to do differently if I were to continue this research. But I'm extremely pleased with the response, and with 642 responses, I was able to really get what I think is a fairly representative sample and be able to draw some interesting conclusions.
It's pretty amazing. And it's a bachelor's thesis. You'd think that this was for a master thesis. So I'm sure you've got loads of stuff that you haven't even gone through.
I do, yeah. Too much.
So, and as we've stated that the surveys, this survey that we're talking about was aimed at queer folks. And you mentioned you did some other things, amongst others, interviews with a handful of queer librarians about their attitudes and experiences. And then you also conducted a mini survey for cisgender heterosexual library users as well. Which is very, very interesting. But since your bachelor thesis focused on the first survey, can you say about the respondents of that survey? Yeah. I mean, who are they? And is there anyone under the LGBTQIA plus umbrella that is more or less represented?
So just to go back to the mini survey also and say a little bit about that first. That was because I really wanted kind of to be able to directly compare queer users to non-queer users on a number of questions that I couldn't find any previous research on. So I really wanted to look at the library, whether the library feels like a safe and inclusive place for queer users, but I couldn't really find surveys that had asked those types of questions of a general population, a majority population. So I ended up deciding kind of partway through the process that I needed to ask questions to a group for comparison also. So that was how that came about. And that was a smaller group, around 300, but gave some really interesting comparisons. And as for who the respondents are, that was something that I was really interested in and focused on, because one problem that I kept coming across when I was looking at previous research is that so often when there is research available on queer respondents at all, it's completely lumped together. So there's this assumption that queer respondents are a monolith and that everyone in the LGBTQIA plus community has the same experience. And even if the researchers have asked people in the process to give, you know, their gender identity or their sexual orientation, it's very rarely broken down into multiple groups. And instead it's just cisgender straight people and queer people as these two monolithic groups. So I was really interested in being able to break it down further and look at differences within the queer community. And that's why I'm so excited about getting so many responses, because that allowed me to do that and to have, you know, a group of over 100 non-binary respondents was amazing. And, you know, like I think 190 something trans respondents, including the non-binary respondents who are under the trans umbrella. It's really hard to say whether anyone under the umbrella is more or less represented compared to the queer population as a whole, because there's so little good research that shows us what the demographic makeup of the queer community in Norway is. But what I can say is that my sample was quite representative in terms of regions in Norway. So I had respondents from all over the country, and rural versus urban, that was quite representative as well. In age group, my sample skewed a little bit young, but according to international research, that also is true of the queer community as society becomes more accepting, more and more people in the younger generations are coming out. So more younger people do identify as queer. So everything that I've seen points to my sample being quite representative, and not really leaving out any particular groups within under the LGBTQIA plus umbrella, but it's really hard to say for sure because of a lack of research for comparison that used a more general sampling method. And this was actually why I got into using Python and Jupyter Notebooks to analyze my data, which you'll see when we go through some results later. But that I quickly realized that with all of this data and all these different subgroups that I wanted to be able to compare, that you know, doing charts in Excel was not going to cut it. So yeah, so that I think the complexity of the queer community and queer identity has really prompted me to look at my data in new ways and to come up with some methods of analyzing that I wouldn't have otherwise.
That sounds like a very good idea, especially yeah. since you have so much data to work on.
Yes.
It's good to organize it a bit. Yeah. So about the survey and the findings, you've been touching up on it. What do you think is important to highlight what you found? Is there anything that surprised you, or did you find stuff that you didn't expect?
Nothing was a big surprise to me. I had done quite a lot of reading on international surveys, as I mentioned before, and I really modeled my survey on things that I had seen covered in the international research because I wanted to be able to compare Norway to international results. And my, if I had a hypothesis at all, it was that Norway would be similar to other Western countries, because having lived in the US and the UK and here, it feels similar to me in many ways as a queer person. It feels like a place where we often hear that we've come a long way and that, you know, love is love, and that we've made so much progress, but being in queer community, you see that that's not always the case. And I see similar things in Norway that I've seen in other Western countries. So my hypothesis would be that the results here would be similar to the other research that I'd read, and that did turn out to be the case. I was actually surprised. I think the thing that surprised me most probably is that there was not, the survey was anonymous, so I didn't want people to be identifiable, so I didn't ask them to give very specific location information. You know, you don't want to end up with one trans woman from a very small village being identifiable in the survey results, because that's no longer anonymous. But I did ask whether people, which region people were in, and I asked whether people were living in an urban center or in a rural area. And the thing that surprised me most, I think, was that there was less difference between the urban and rural responses here than in the US and in the UK. I would have actually expected there to be more difference here, you know, kind of thinking about Norwegian dialects and how, you know, that you can have completely different words for the same object in a small valley versus in Oslo. It seems like regional differences and rural and urban differences are very pronounced here in other areas, but there was actually quite a small difference in how rural and urban respondents answered the survey questions. And as you might expect, there was more, a little bit more feeling of inclusion and safety in urban areas, where I think there are more queer people concentrated in the cities, but the difference was smaller than I would have expected.
In the other countries that you mentioned, the UK and the US, is that similar, that it's the urban areas that are, yeah, that the same results?
Yes, yeah, the same direction, but just there seems to be a much wider difference, particularly in the US, between small towns and big cities.
That's very interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, because it, you know, you mentioned that there's little research done in Norway. And this is then, as far as I know, it's a very unique and pioneering survey looking at the library and inclusion from queer folks' point of view and not the other way around. So is there Is this the first survey done on this topic in Norway? Have you found anything?
I was not able to find any published research on this topic. I found one previous bachelor's thesis that I read through, and it was really well done. But that was specifically looking at holdings of queer materials in libraries in Viken. So that was much more specific, and I was looking a lot more broadly. So that was why I ended up drawing on a lot of international surveys when I was designing my own survey.
But you found similar subjects abroad, outside of Norway. You could find things that were similar. So you had a way of comparing things.
Yeah, definitely.
That's... It's very good that someone's made this ball rolling, as we talked about earlier. Yeah. Someone started this, and hopefully people will pick it up and see that this is important to talk about and see, especially from the library world where we come from, because this is an actual thing. That's what your survey is showing. And, you know, people are experiencing different, you know, they've got different experiences from the library world and how they feel included or not.
Yeah, so that was, I just realized that you had asked me about highlights of the results, which I didn't get to. I focused on the question about what I didn't expect. So I guess I can talk about some of the results.
Go ahead.
To do that, I think I will share my screen. So I'll just mention while this is loading. There we go. Is that shared now?
That is shared.
Okay. So this is a landing page that I made for anyone who's interested in reading more about this topic. I have quite a lot of resources available, and this is at bibliotekforalle.card.co, which you should be able to see at the top of the screen. My whole bachelor's thesis is available here in Norwegian. I hope that English is my native language, and Karina's English is much better than my Norwegian. So I hope that this video will be accessible for most people. But if English is hard for you, then you are welcome to read as much as you could ever have wanted to read on this topic in Norwegian here. But I am just going to go to this interactive in English, and this is going to take a moment to load. This is an interactive Jupyter notebook, and I was very fortunate in that my partner is one of the developers of the Jupyter notebook. So I had a great teacher at home helping me wrangle my data and figure out how to analyze this massive pile of survey responses that I ended up with. So I'll just wait for this to load, and then I can take you through some of the key results. But in general, the survey kind of, it was a massive survey. It took most people about 20 minutes or more to answer, which was amazing that I got as many responses as I did, given how long the survey was. It basically had two main topics, one of which was about the library as a space and whether it is a safe and inclusive space for queer folks. And that was kind of based on, you know, this in the formålsparagraf in the Folkebiblioteksloven is the phrase that the library is for alle som bor I landet, for everyone who lives in the country. And we often hear this phrase, you know, the library is for everyone. And I wanted to investigate whether that is accurate, whether different kinds of people, minority groups, marginalized groups actually feel included and welcome in the library. And then the second one was about the collection and queer representation in the collection. And I ended up focusing in writing my survey on the first part, the library as a physical space. So I'm still really digging into the data on the other main topic. And hopefully I will be able to get going on that and to write some articles from that material as well. So this is just an interactive Jupyter notebook, that dashboard that I made to share some of the results. And this has some more of the who the respondents are, if that's something that you're interested in reading more about. For now, I'm just going to go through that and go down to some of the results from the survey questions. So here I was asking about I'll look at a couple of the questions first about the collection and about queer representation. So I asked about whether for people it was generally important to see their own identity reflected in books and other media. And here you can see this phrase in square brackets, queer/LGBTQIA. That's because for the queer respondents, they had this phrase in their question. And for the cisgender heterosexual respondents, to get a comparison, this phrase was just omitted. So for them, they got the question, in general, it's important for me to see my own identity reflected in books and other media. I didn't put in cisgender heterosexual because I was a little bit worried that that would either be confusing to some people, because majority cultures are not as used to reflecting over their own identity as marginalized and minority groups are. So that's what you're seeing here, and why cisgender heterosexual respondents were able to respond to this question. So if we look at, if we break down, this is, I'm noticing now that these are still in Norwegian. Apologies, I will fix that later. This is still a work in progress. But this bottom group is cisgender heterosexual respondents who in general did not feel that it was very important to see their own identity reflected in media. And one respondent actually wrote in the comments at the end, isn't the whole point of reading to read about people who are different from yourself and who have different experiences? Which was kind of an interesting thing for me to get that kind of glimpse into the mindset of why the results looked like this. But as you can see, this is very different for the queer respondents. This middle group here is cisgender queer respondents, so people who are cis men and cis women, but who have a sexual orientation other than straight. And then the top group is for trans respondents, including non-binary respondents. So for both groups, the agree either somewhat or strongly agree is above 80%. And for trans respondents, it's even more important to see their own identity reflected in books and media. So this one really showed me that there is a really strong need for queer media. And that may be something that non-queer librarians are not entirely aware of, because if they fall into this group down here and they're thinking like that one respondent, oh, the nice thing is to read about other people and other experiences, it may not occur to them that this other group has this need. So this question was kind of the foundation of the part of the survey that was about collection development. And then if you look at some of the other responses, like this question, the library usually has what I'm looking for when I'm looking for specific queer materials. Here you can see that most cisgender heterosexual respondents are able to find the materials that they're looking for when they're looking for something specific, and very few queer respondents are able to find the queer materials that they're looking for. And that's not to say that queer folks are only and always ever looking for queer media at the library, but when they are, only best case scenario, around 25% of them are able to find it. And for trans respondents, that was even lower, under 20%. I asked similar questions about, it's easy for me to find a selection of books and other media at the library where the main characters have the same gender identity as me. Here, cisgender folks were most likely to agree, whether queer or not. But trans respondents, only 8% agree. So for trans folks, it's very hard to find media at the library. And many people did point out that this is not necessarily the fault of the library. Libraries can't stock books that don't exist. And the publishing industry has a long way to go here as well, particularly. I wish that personally that the Norwegian publishing industry would focus more on translating queer works from English, because there actually are a ton out there. They're just not available in Norwegian. But I think libraries also can be doing a better job of making sure that these books are represented in the collection. This is the same question, but regarding sexual or romantic orientation, where cisgender heterosexual respondents, over 80% said, yes, it's easy for me to find books with other heterosexual people. Again, very few queer folks can say the same. And then if we go over to, this one was an interesting one. This one was not answered. It was just without the section in brackets. Mm-hmm. But this is often a pet peeve that you hear when you talk about media with people in the queer community, is that many, many queer stories, especially those written by non-queer authors, end in tragedy. And there are very few stories out there that show LGBTQIA folks just, you know, living their lives and where they get a happy ending, or whether their story doesn't necessarily involve bullying or death or tragedy that stems from their queer identity. So that's something that I would also love to see, and that many of my respondents would love to see libraries focus on stocking. Mm-hmm. If we just switch over to the other kind of main topic of the survey about safe spaces, this was where my bachelor's thesis mostly focused. And please, I feel like I'm just talking and talking. Please feel free to jump in with questions if you have any.
I think you're very thorough, so I don't have any questions yet, but you okay. Just continue with this.
Let me know if you do. I will. I wanted to see what people's general perception was of whether libraries are safe spaces for queer and LGBTQIA plus folks. And here I was interested that there wasn't that much difference. And this is, I think, the only question in the entire survey where, you know, usually we have this stacked order of cisgender heterosexual, cisgender queer, and trans with or without sexual orientations other than straight. But here the cisgender heterosexual respondents actually end up in the middle, which was really interesting to me, and I would love to explore more about why that is. But cisgender queer folks were the most likely to say that the library is a safe space for LGBTQIA patrons. Trans respondents were the least likely to feel that way. And cisgender heterosexual respondents ended up in the middle. But they're all, you know, relatively similar. The percentages that strongly agree are a little bit more different, but this is not a huge difference compared to most of the questions. Mm. But then if we go to this question, I always feel safe and welcome at the library, making it more personal. It was interesting to me that these numbers are actually higher, more positive than the general question, but they're also a lot more different from each other. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like people were kind of underestimating the safety and inclusion at the library. They were saying, well, I generally feel safe, but I'm sure there are some people out there who don't. And at least that's how I read those responses. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of a general perception that the library is generally welcoming and safe. But then individuals' experience is actually more positive than that general perception, which is great. What's less great is the huge difference, particularly between these two groups, to me, that particularly trans individuals, including non-binary individuals, only 41% strongly agree that they always feel safe and welcome at the library, as compared to 81% of cisgender heterosexual people. And I think that this is a result that library employees really need to think about. This is this is not only, you know, does somebody feel safe when they're in the library, but this is impacting, am I going to go to the library? you know, this is something that, these are the people who do come to the library. These are the respondents who do use the library. Mm-hmm. But how many people are there out there who are choosing not to use the library because it doesn't feel like a safe place? And that's something that I'd like to do more looking into as well.
That's very interesting. And that's kind of the gist of your whole research, isn't it? If yeah. the library is for everyone.
Exactly.
So that's very interesting. Could you see some clear parallels between this and the research you read from other countries?
Yeah, I did not. I unfortunately didn't find another survey that used this exact wording that's directly comparable, but there's definitely a lot of qualitative data, a lot of interviews from other countries that talk about people feeling wary at the library. And again, this is something that, you know, like when I said libraries can't stock the books that don't exist, I want to specify that this is not just about the library. This is about public spaces in general. Mm-hmm. And multiple respondents pointed that out in their comments at the end of the survey and said, you know, the library is no better or no worse than other public spaces. And in general, I don't feel safe being visibly queer in public. Mm. So, and some people said, you know, the library is probably the best public space, but it's still not, doesn't feel entirely safe, or I never feel like I can really be off my guard. And I think there's maybe just not a lot of awareness on the part of non-queer librarians that is the reality that a lot of queer patrons are living with, mm-hmm. that they come in and they have this, the terminology that is used in the research is minority stress, mm-hmm. The stress of kind of being vigilant because you know that you're a part of a group that's marginalized and that does experience discrimination. And that even if you haven't experienced that discrimination yourself, even if you've only had positive experiences in the back of your mind, you're kind of always still on guard and you're always feeling that that wariness. Mm-hmm. So that is definitely reflected in the international literature, and that's something that I see here as well. This one was really interesting to me. I feel that, I think this phrasing is a little bit wrong. I think it said, I always feel that I can be completely myself at the library. Mm-hmm. And this was prompted by, there's a lot of writing in the Norwegian LIS literature about the library as a public sphere institution, and you know, the høyintensiv og lavintensiv møteplass, and this idea of, you know, dialogue across groups and making minority and majority groups visible to each other. Mm-hmm. And so to me, I wanted to find out whether that's really happening in the case of queer people, because there's quite a lot of research on it in terms of ethnic minority populations or religious minority populations. But queer folks are often referred to as an invisible minority. And, you know, people can be visibly queer. There's, you know, we have the word gaydar for a reason. There is a sense that you can sometimes tell just from looking at someone whether they're queer or not. You know, I wear my rainbow armband in order to be more visible. Mm-hmm. But you can't always tell. And so if people are choosing or not feeling that they can be themselves at the library, that they can bring that part of their identity to the library, mm-hmm. then that for me is calling into question whether libraries are having that function of being the lavintensiv møteplass, where mm-hmm. people are becoming visible to each other across differences. Mm-hmm. And here we see this enormous difference that, you know, if we combine strongly and somewhat agree, you have, you know, around 80% again of people, more than 80% of cisgender heterosexual folks saying, yes, I always feel I can be completely myself at the library. That steps down significantly for both cis queer folks and trans folks, to the point where we only have 23% of trans respondents strongly agreeing that they can be entirely themselves at the library. And when that's the case, you're not having an equal dialogue and an open dialogue where people are becoming visible to each other and sharing ideas on an even footing, because you have this one group that's not feeling safe or free to share who they are and all of themselves. So this to me was one of the most interesting results from the survey.
Definitely. And it shows that, you know, we have a long way to go to be able to actually claim that the library is for everyone. Yeah. And that we should actually, well, the library world should actually work harder on this. And in relation to that, do you have any specific suggestions or practical steps to share with librarians out there, which will help them on the way to making the library more inclusive for queer folks?
Yeah, I do. While I am still sharing my screen, since it's directly related, I'm just going to look at this one. The question was, sometimes I wonder or worry about how my identity will impact how I'll be treated by library employees. Mm-hmm. Let me just sort this a little bit differently so it's easier to see. There we go. So we have cisgender heterosexual respondents are not really concerned about how their identity will impact how they're treated by library employees. And again, we have trans folks quite concerned about how their identity might impact their treatment. Luckily, these labels at the bottom are incorrect. I apologize, but luckily, strongly agree is relatively small here, but we have quite a large 34% somewhat agreeing. So this is something that people worry about. And for librarians, I would love librarians to be cognizant of this and to be aware I miss the phrase in English in meetings with, but that doesn't sound right in English. But when they interact with patrons who may be visibly trans or visibly queer, I would love for librarians to understand that this is something that people worry about, and to let that inform the way that they interact with patrons. Mm. Yeah, so I'll just stop sharing my screen and talk about some tips, which was the actual question that you asked. Yeah.
Body language is important, isn't it? Body language in the way you look at people and how you meet people.
Yeah. Mm. And there was actually one of my favorite things that I read in the international literature was there's a librarian who recommends that all non-queer librarians go in a room by themselves and practice saying words like gay and trans and queer and lesbian out loud to themselves until they can say it without, there's kind of a hesitancy when you're saying a word that you're not entirely comfortable with or you're not totally sure that you're using the right word. And people pick up on that. And I know that can be scary for people who want to say the right thing, but aren't sure if they're doing that. So I love this advice to like just go in a room and say queer, trans, just say it loud and practice making that a part of your vocabulary. Mm-hmm. So language is very important. I would say going back to that, the anecdote that prompted the survey at the beginning, I would love to see more librarians using gender neutral language, inclusive language. If somebody is talking about a partner, try to consciously use gender neutral pronouns. More and more people are adopting hen in Norwegian, or we can always say vedkomne, which sounds a little bit formal, but you know, is I think better than accidentally misgendering someone or their partner. So that kind of inclusive language is really important. Some other tips that came directly from survey results and from people giving comments on the survey is it was really important to people just in general that there's more queer media in libraries. So I think this should be an area of focus for people who have responsibility for collection development. And two areas in particular, people talked a lot about that it's really important to have representation in children's books and young adult books. And that wouldn't necessarily be the first section that you would think about. It seems like, excuse me, a lot of people think about, you know, romance, that you need to have queer romance represented, but queerness isn't just about sexuality. It's not just about orientation. It's also about identity. Mm-hmm. And kids really need to be able to see themselves reflected in literature and see mm-hmm. that there are people like them out there so that they don't grow up with this idea that they're the only one, because nobody is talking about it and they never see it in media. So if you're a librarian or a library student who will have someday responsibility for collection development, this is something that I hope you'll think about. There are a lot of great lists out there and resources for finding newly published queer literature. If you just Google, it's often called queer lit, it's called rainbow literature, it's called LGBT literature. So there's a few different search terms to use. And another area is the English collection. This is somewhere where I'd love to do more research, but it seems anecdotally so far that queer folks end up reading a lot more English and watching a lot more English media because there is so much more representation available. And because there is that need, as we saw, the, you know, above 80% of people feel that it's very important that they're to see themselves reflected in media. So queer communities often go out looking for that and they find it in English literature. So even if your library is not one that generally has a lot of English books available, or that doesn't have, you know, a big budget for buying English media, if you do have any budget, I would recommend prioritizing buying queer media and seeking this out, because there is much more available in English than there is in Norwegian, and it will be more accessible to your queer patrons than to a general patron at your library. A couple of other concrete tips about shelving and marking. Part of the survey was about rainbow shelves, which have become quite popular in Sweden. But I believe there's only one in Norway, as far as I know, and it's at Biblo, Deichmanteien. They have recently started started a rainbow shelf, and I would love to talk to them more about it and their experiences. But this is a phenomenon of shelving queer literature together on its own shelf as though it's a genre in and of mm-hmm. itself. There were some pretty split opinions on this in the survey, but in general, the majority were in favor of this. A relatively small percentage said, no, don't do that. But there was a pretty big contingent that was kind of like, maybe I can see benefits and maybe some negatives as well. But a lot of people said, if it's possible, shelve one copy of a book on a rainbow shelf and then one with the general collection. Mm-hmm. So if you're fortunate enough to work at a library with a budget big enough to have two copies of a queer book, then that might be a solution. And mm-hmm. I've also had conversations with people about marking. A lot of libraries use stickers on the spines of books to mark the genre or other information about the book. I've seen a lot of people, and actually the Bibliotek Sentralen sells little rainbow heart stickers. I would personally caution against using a rainbow heart, because that really privileges the romantic and sexual orientation side over the gender identity side. And it also kind of conflates queerness with romance again. So what I do, I'm now a school librarian, and what I've started doing in my library, and what I would recommend that other people do, is I bought some rainbow washi tape. I got it on Etsy, but it's available in many different places. It's just a little rainbow tape roll, and I put that on the spine, and then I also put a genre sticker on it. So, you know, it'll have a horror and a rainbow sticker, or it'll have the heart for romance and a rainbow tape. Because being queer or having queer characters doesn't define the genre of a book. It doesn't tell you anything about what the book is about. And there are queer kids and queer adults who want to read books of all different genres. And they may not find those horror books with a queer main character if all that's used is the little rainbow hearts.
I've never thought about it that way, but that's a really, really good tip.
Yeah, it's that's something that I would love to see. Maybe Bibliothèque Centrale can start selling some rainbow washi tape as well.
So you don't have to go on Etsy to buy it.
Yes, exactly. The last two things I'll talk about, bathrooms are a topic that always comes up when we're talking about trans folks' inclusion in public spaces. Mm. The whole bathroom debate has been just outrageously politicized, which I think is really unfortunate. But it's really as simple as people who come into your library deserve to be able to pee in a safe environment. So if you don't have a gender-neutral restroom or all gender-neutral restrooms, try to think about whether that's possible, if that's something that you can do in your library with the budget that you have, if it's just a matter of changing a sign. I understand that a lot of people are not going to have the budget to build an entirely new single stall bathroom, but maybe you have two single stall bathrooms right next to each other and one has the little man figure and one has the little woman figure, and there's really no reason for that. They can both just be gender neutral. So that is one thing that ended up quite high on the list of things that are important to make you feel safe in the library when answered by trans and non-binary patrons. That was not number one, but I believe it was like number three out of a list of 20 things that I gave. And that whole list is available in my thesis if you're interested in looking at that. And then the last thing is a very popular thing to do is to put up a rainbow flag or to have, you know, a pride display. A rainbow flag or a safe space sign was actually the very last item on the list, but it was still ranked as important, just less important than all the other things like bathrooms, inclusive language, better collections. So it doesn't hurt to put up a rainbow flag. It may help some people feel safe. It may help remind employees just when they see it, like, oh yeah, that's something I need to be thinking about, that there are queer patrons here, whether or not I can see them, whether or not I know that they're here. Mm-hmm. They are here, and it's something that I should be thinking about. And that is just kind of a visual reminder of that.
Yeah, because there's no point in having male and female bathrooms and just hang up a queer flag or a pride flag. That would just be ridiculous. Then you haven't actually nipped the problem in the bud, have you?
Yes. Yeah. No, I would not recommend putting the rainbow flag on the bathroom. Maybe on the door or above the skronke. What do we call a skronke in English? I don't even know.
Library desk.
Reference desk.
Yeah, reference desk.
So those are some tips. And since I mentioned pride also, it was something that came up quite a few times in people's responses that that they wish that libraries would do more to involve queer patrons and more with queer collections outside of Pride Month. Most people seem to think that most libraries are doing a great job during Pride Month of having a pride display, hanging up a flag. But we're queer all year, not just during June. So showing patrons that you are including them in the collection in events year round is really important.
Thank you for all those really good tips. They've made me reflect loads over these things, and I'm going to bring these with me when I go back to work, and I'm going to forward this to my colleagues, definitely.
Oh, that's great.
So I really appreciate you giving such concrete tips and that you back them up with the survey and that you actually, I'm amazed that you actually asked these questions so specifically, and I'm very impressed in how you managed to think about all of these things and remember to ask about these things. To get a more detailed response, I guess.
That's one of the benefits of being a part of the group that you're researching is that it's something that's relevant to my everyday life. So that was, and then one more tip. I know I've already talked a lot, but one more tip that has really helped me, because even though I am queer, I'm one person with my own unique combination of identities within the LGBTQIA+ umbrella, but I don't have the experience of a trans woman, for example. I don't have the experience of Also, melaninrik is a great Norwegian word that I wish we had in English, but I don't understand. I don't have the experience of a queer person of color. So one tip that has really helped me is just to follow a lot of LGBTQIA plus people on social media. I would love to give a shout out to the Trans Norge podcast, specifically because the results show that trans folks' experiences with libraries are significantly more negative than cis queer folks' experiences. I think that's a place where librarians could productively focus their energy, is on understanding the experience that their trans patrons have, both inside and outside the library. It is rough right now for trans folks in Norway and in the world. We are really backsliding on trans rights. And I don't think that that's something that a lot of people in the majority population are aware of.
No.
Because it doesn't make it into the media in the form of trans people talking about their own lives. And so the Trans Norge podcast, which is free, is hosted by a couple of trans folks, and they have great guests, and they talk about just issues that are relevant to trans people in Norway today. And that is something that I really recommend listening to, just to understand what the world is like right now for trans folks and queer folks, and why many of them might like to see the library as a haven and a safe place.
And I think educating yourself by doing this type of research and listening to podcasts, then you will also learn the language that they use and maybe feel more comfortable when you're saying the words out loud, practicing these things in a room by yourself, saying queer and gay and lesbian out loud.
Yeah. And so, a lot of and the podcasts can answer a lot of the questions that you may have, but may be embarrassed to ask someone, or the, you know, people don't always appreciate being asked questions about their identity because they're often questions they've been asked hundreds of times already, and it gets frustrating.
Exactly.
So podcasts and following people on social media are a great way to get the answers to those questions and take in information without having to bother somebody else with it.
Exactly. And you might not even know that you have access to someone who is queer.
Yes.
So it's really good for everyone to actually start listening to these things.
Yeah.
I think we have to wrap it up now, but I'm going to ask you one question before we finish. And I'm just wondering, what's the way forward now for you? What's your plans in relation to this research? Have you got any new projects underway?
As someone who is autistic and probably also has ADHD, I am always full of plans. But my gjennomføringsevne is not best. So I have a lot of plans. We will see which ones I manage to accomplish. But I am working on a couple of articles. I mentioned before that there's no published research on this topic in Norway, and that is still the case because my research is still unpublished. So I'm really hoping to submit an article for peer review soon, and to get some of this data out there in a more widely accessible way. I'm also working on an article for Boko Bibliotek that's more aimed at what we were just talking about, the more practical, concrete tips for people who are currently working as librarians. And I'm also working on writing a children's book.
Wow, amazing.
There are a couple of queer alphabet books available in English, but most of them are a little bit kind of cutesy and rhyming and meant for little kids. There's one called The Gay BCs, for example.
That's amazing.
But I really see a need for more information for youth in Norway about queer identities. I know this is a really controversial topic right now. There's been a lot in the media about parents not wanting their children to learn about gender identities, and the people pulling their kids from school for hearing the pronoun hen.
But, in Norway.
But this is, I think that's all the more reason why a book like this needs to exist. So I'm working on writing an alphabet book to make LGBTQIA plus terminology more accessible to kids and their caregivers.
we should teach them young, and maybe some of these books will be practical for adults as well. Yeah. You know, to teach them the language and how to express this. Yeah, I think that's very important.
And just to know that they're not alone or not weird or not exactly. Weird in a bad way. I mean, yeah. Weird maybe yes, but not not wrong.
Not A4.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that's amazing. It sounds like you've got some really interesting projects ongoing, and I really look forward to following everything you're going to continue with.
Thank you.
And it's so good that you are doing this and focusing on it and getting the media coverage. And hopefully more people are going to nip this in the bud and actually, you know, write about it. Library students maybe doing their bachelor thesis based on your research, or continuing it, or doing versions of it. I think we're going to see more of this actually.
I hope so.
In the future.
And I just want to mention too, if there are students listening to this, that I have made all of my quantitative data publicly and freely available, and that's back at that link that I was at earlier, bibliothekforalle.card.co. There's a GitHub repository, I think it's the purple link, that has all of the raw data available, and you can always email me if you're not sure how to use it.
That's absolutely
I'm happy amazing. To help, and would love more people to take up this research and work on this topic.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure having you as a guest. And yeah, as I said, following your projects in the future is something I'm going to do. And as a part of the communications group at OsloMet, the university library, I'm definitely going to be telling my colleagues about this research and forwarding it and just spreading it as much as possible.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
So you take care, and we'll speak soon.
Thanks. You too.
Bye.
Bye.